Hi, everyone. We're coming in on Thursday, April 25th, on the heels of the decision to overturn Harvey Weinstein's conviction in New York. And our brilliant producer, Roger, thought it would be informative to our audience to just answer some questions around this case and the ways that this decision may or may not impact other decisions and how the current trial in New York against Donald Trump will or will not be impacted by this Harvey Weinstein decision.
So Margot, thanks for jumping on this with me.
And absolutely.
Just for, you know, for people just tuning in, because it just all happened really quickly. I don't think anybody was expecting this morning. Can you just give us a brief overview on kind of what happened?
Yeah, I was not expecting this either. As far as I knew, the Harvey Weinstein cases that had been held a few years ago were over. He had been convicted both in New York and by a jury and in California and was serving, as far as I knew, concurrent sentences on both of those convictions. It is very common to appeal a conviction. That part did not surprise me. I assumed that Harvey Weinstein appealed his case. What I did not expect, like many other people, was that the conviction would be overturned because of the strength of the evidence against him.
I think one of the questions people have right away when they see it's overturned is like, is he getting out of prison for this?
So as far as I know, he is not getting out of prison. He's still serving a very lengthy sentence in his California case. I think he has 16 more years on that sentence. Now that this New York sentence has been overturned, it will basically like erase the New York sentence. So he's still serving his California sentence, but we learned from his attorney today that he intends to appeal his California sentence, and that appeal will be submitted on May 20th. And what I would just say is that the reverberations of this decision are going to be felt far and wide. So one, all of the victims that put themselves out there for both the New York case and the California case are going to be re-traumatized, even hearing that this case is up for debate again. And the fact that the New York case was overturned is going to have an impact on the California case.
In your experience, like, how does that, if another court sees that, you know, a similar trial has been overturned, does that cause them to look at it in a different way? Or
so it shouldn't, because each case, judges are tasked with deciding each case on their own merits, right? So the California case had different facts, had different victims. They were cases that were within the jurisdiction of the California court, meaning that they happened in California. So there were two separate cases. The judges really shouldn't be having one case impact another, but judges are human and judges read the news just like us. And I, to your point, Roger, if a judge in, or judges in New York decided that there were errors in how the underlying case was tried and that either people were not credible, meaning the victims were not credible, or that certain victim testimony shouldn't have come in, it's quite possible but that the judges in California are now going to look maybe a little bit harder than they would have at the underlying case in their case as well, once it is appealed.
You know, and this Weinstein case was really right there as part of like the Me Too movement. Were you working with survivors at that time? Do you remember that happening? And what did that feel like?
Yeah, I was absolutely. I mean, I was kind of deep in working with survivors in 2017, 2018 at the kind of height of Me Too. I mean, I guess it would be even earlier kind of with Donald Trump in 2016 through 2018. And it was a galvanizing moment for, I think, a lot of people. For me, nothing that was happening was surprising. I was not shocked at all by the stories that were coming forward. And on the one hand, was happy that a lot of survivors' voices were being heard wider, but was disappointed because it was a certain selection of survivor voices that were really loud. And so the voices that we heard through the echoes of the Me Too movement were very much based out of Hollywood, starting out of Hollywood, and very much based out of a slice of the population that had access to power. Many of them were white, not all of them, or white adjacent, right? That wasn't the population that I was representing. I think for those of us who've done the work or who've been impacted by intimate partner or sexual violence, and particularly sexual violence in the workplace, sexual harassment, sexual violence, right? That has happened and continues to happen at all levels, right? And the Me Too movement didn't change any of that. I think what it did do was give people more language, more awareness of how rampant the issue was. And for that, I'm deeply grateful. I think it allowed more people to talk about their trauma. And I think that can be very helpful for certain individuals in their own healing. The disappointing part of Me Too was that it really focused on certain men, right? So it focused on Harvey Weinstein. It focused on Matt Lauer. It focused on Epstein, right? All of whom engaged in really terrible abuses of power. And so many people knew about it. But they're three people. I don't see huge impacts in conviction rates or reporting rates or judges kind of bringing a trauma-informed lens to certain issues around credibility. But I would love to be wrong.
What do you think about it's important for people to get fair trials? You know, that's like, we want everyone to get them. What is your opinion and your experience with, you know, judges having such kind of a wide range of authority on what they let in? And, you know, like with the Trump, the hush money case going on, it's very clear that he's, all the Trump cases, they're being very careful with the exception of.
Absolutely. So without getting too into legalese, and frankly, like evidence was not my strong suit, even I was not a criminal attorney.
Totally.
But the rules of evidence, we have an adversarial system. And in the criminal justice system where there's a defendant or a named defendant, we have a very high bar for conviction. So everyone knows the term beyond a reasonable doubt. And that high bar is in place to protect defendants' rights, right? We don't want to be convicting people who are factually or actually innocent, even though we know that we do. And the way the criminal justice system has been constructed is that it is theoretically better for a guilty person to be free than for an innocent person to be not free. Okay, so we have this very high standard beyond a reasonable doubt. And we have the rules of evidence. The rules of evidence delineate what can come in different types of cases, yep. Right? And so in criminal cases, if there is a named victim, that victim can talk about what they experienced, basically. And then judges get to rule on whether circumstantial evidence or evidence from other people or other experiences can come in. And broadly, it has to be relevant, obviously, to the issue at hand. And it has to be more probative than prejudicial, meaning that it has to be more relevant to the case than prejudicial to the defendant. But like you said, Roger, that's a very subjective lens.
Yeah.
And what one judge deems to be probative may be prejudicial to another judge. And to your point about the number of eyeballs on this Trump case and on the Weinstein case, but now very much on the Trump case. If Trump is convicted, the case will absolutely be appealed. So that's kind of whether or not that conviction is valid or not. And so the judge is trying to minimize the risk of whatever decision being overturned. So I hypothesize that judge is being very, very conservative, meaning not letting much in that's not individual people's own experiences. So you brought up, I hadn't read this, but you brought up in the Trump case that the Access Hollywood tapes were being allowed.
Just the transcript. So the words will be allowed to be in evidence, but they can't play the tape or the sound of it. That's really interesting, I think, because it's like, it is evidence. Theoretically, it's the same content, but there's obviously a different way you read.
So it's format, like, right? When you read grab someone by the versus you hear the president of the United States say that, it's different. And so that judge is making a call,
right,
that it's too incendiary, that there's going to be gasps from the courtroom, that those gasps, I mean, I'm hypothesizing, right? Cool. But that the jurors are going to see how people respond to listening to the word. To that point, right? Like, hearing it is different than reading it. He said it. his own, he said it in his own words. It's obviously relevant to the case at hand, right? So there's no question about that, but it's also prejudicial. The Access Hollywood tapes, as far as I know, are not the crux of the case, right? I think one of the things that is so painful about the news today, and where people might be having really understandably very strong reactions, is the reality for most survivors of sexual assault is so horrible. I mean, obviously horrible just by the fact that someone has experienced violence in this way. So that's just objectively terrible. The vast majority of cases of sexual violence are never prosecuted, even if they are reported. So I think that bears repeating, right? Most cases of sexual violence, people never report or never report to law enforcement, even if they go to the hospital. So that's one.
Right.
Of the cases that are reported to law enforcement or to the police, most of those cases never move forward, meaning they're never prosecuted. So that's an even smaller subset. If those cases are prosecuted, the majority of those cases are not convictions. Okay. Of those convictions, there's so few. And of those convictions, even fewer of those people go to jail. So the amount of sexual violence in this country is like millions of times more prevalent than the amount of defendants who are in jail for sexual violence. So I think that's really important for perspective. I think high profile cases are very painful and important. And so I think for people who've been impacted by sexual violence, seeing cases in the news can be, on the one hand, affirming, right? Like someone being held accountable who has a lot of power, and people talking about it is important, but it also can be re-triggering for people's own experiences. But getting cases overturned is even worse, because the sliver of cases that are convictions, people put a lot of importance in, understandably, and then to think that that's not permanent. And I think there's also, of course, this very real reality that's going to happen now, that he's back in the news.
Yeah.
And these stories are back in the news, and this case is back in the news, and very, very painful. I mean, I think for Harvey Weinstein, I think the symbolism of his convictions being overturned will have really profound impacts downstream around reporting, around people feeling like they would be believed, around wanting to participate in the prosecution of their perpetrator. Like, why would someone want to do this if they go through all of this kind of upheaval of their lives, have to tell their stories in front of millions of people, and then for it to be overturned? And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have an appeal process. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, from the perspective of a survivor, you could understand why this could be so unbelievably painful.
So in New York, they're already saying that they're going to do everything they can. You know, the prosecutors are going to try to retry this if they can. So, you know, the witnesses again, so they've got to go through that.
Yeah, but what's it say they have witnesses again?
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, on top of that, I think, obviously, it's critically important that we have an appellate, you know, system in place. But I can't help but notice that, you know, it's like the richer and wider you are, the fairer the trial that you get, you know, and it's not like.
Yes. I mean, there's also this very. So in the United States, in criminal prosecutions, everyone has the right to an attorney, meaning if you are indigent or you don't have your own money, you get a public defender or someone who is paid for by the state. And let me tell you, some of the best attorneys I've ever met in my entire life are public defenders, both on the litigation side and on the appellate side. However, some of those, the best public defenders, end up going into private practice. And I am not saying, well, I am going to say this, that the type of representation a Harvey Weinstein can get, because he can pay whatever it costs to have the most experienced defense attorney and all of his or her associates work on an appeal, is just more capacity than a public defender's office would have.
Right.
And so you bring up this very real and tragic part about our system that access to privilege, often in the form of money and whiteness, will get you access to better representation, particularly at the appellate level. I didn't know this, but again, not surprised. In the dissent, I was reading that one of the judges mentioned that this decision follows a disturbing pattern in New York of overturning jury convictions in sexual assault cases, which when I read it, I was like, right, obviously, if they're going to overturn anything, they're going to overturn these cases where the credibility of people's experiences is being evaluated.
Yeah.
They're not ballistics. There's not, right? Like,
oh yeah. And it's, you know, they get to go, I mean, and the richer and wider you are, like leading up to it, the odds of you having a prior conviction going in are way lower, right?
I mean,
I think that's
acts of a prior conviction. At the sentencing, so many factors are considered, including community ties, including family dynamics, including employment, right? It's a lot of things that we know are code for other things. One of the things that Tashira and I are trying to do, and we'd love your feedback, is weave in our passion for social justice activism and our prior experience as lawyers into a community that we know has a strong voice and an eagerness to see change. And the reason, or one of the reasons that this decision is important, is because of the pervasiveness of sexual violence. So we can, I mean, in many ways, I think a lot of people say, you know, why should I care about Harvey Weinstein? He's another, you know, rich guy who behaved badly to get close to models. And it's true. And on the other hand, he represents so much what that is wrong with our system, where men or people who identify as men in power with access to money use that to harm women. And that is something that our community really can activate against. I also think that it is part and parcel in a troubling line of narratives, like news narratives going on right now, where men who behave badly are getting slaps on the wrist. Yeah. And, you know, we're not the justice system, but we do make up an electorate and we do make up a large swath of the population, and we do teach young people and have children and have families and have a lot of men and women in our lives. And so we need to be having these conversations just as we have other conversations around policies and things that impact women at a big age, right? So I have heard, for example, like sometimes, wow, I'm so happy I'm not young anymore because I don't need to deal with sexual harassment the way I used to. And on the one hand, when I hear stuff like that, I do kind of relate to it in some ways. And on the other hand, maybe this is our time to really be the voice against it because we can. And so I think this is going to be just something that we have to keep our eyes and ears on. If you want to hear more about this, let us know. We learned that his attorneys intend to appeal the California case on May 20th, which is less than a month away. And so I imagine there will be news coming in as that date gets closer.
Thanks for listening to Justice. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you'd like to learn more about our podcast, be sure to check us out on our website at justicepodcast.com. You can also reach out to us there if you want to be featured on the show, or if you have a business or a product that you think would be a good fit for our audience. Thanks again for listening.